This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to Augusta Free Press on Facebook. I am Chris Graham, and this is Street Knowledge. And we're going to talk some politics here on a Tuesday. I'm trying to mix more of news and politics in with our regular sports fair because, hey, I've been a news and politics reporter for many, many years. And just because sports is more fun doesn't mean politics can't be as well, I guess, right? So thank you for joining us here, both live on Facebook. If you're also on the podcast version, thank you for that as well. Wanted to talk today about, we wrote a story on the website and hope to get a chance to read it. If you've already read it, great, then you're sort of ready for me to start going into a Quinnipiac University poll of Republican voters, and actually of all voters, but I'm focusing on the Republican voters, and their attitudes towards Donald Trump. Again, the poll was of independents, Democrats, and Republicans. The numbers that jumped out at me, though, were the numbers regarding Republicans wanting Donald Trump to continue to play a prominent role in the Republican Party. 75%, according to this poll, want Donald Trump to remain a prominent player in the GOP. And so you could take that and say, wow, that's a lot of Republicans who want Donald Trump to remain a prominent part of the GOP. You could also point to the 21% who don't, and then question how the next 4 years goes for that group, maybe even the next 2 years or 18 months up to the next midterm elections. And then the poll also reveals that 61% of independents don't want to see Donald Trump remain a major player in the Republican Party. Pretty significant, considering that, let's look at what just happened politically in this country. I don't mean just happened in terms of the impeachment trial, the 57-43 vote to convict that didn't quite get to the point of convicting the former president now of high crimes and misdemeanors, though significantly seven Republicans did bolt and vote to convict, which is interesting. Only the second time that a president facing impeachment got a majority vote for conviction, the other being Andrew Johnson, it was one vote away from being convicted back in the 1860s after the Civil War. Bill Clinton back in the 90s, I think one vote was 45 in favor, the other was 50-50 deadlock. You need a two-thirds vote to convict and remove from office. And of course, in Trump's case, he's already out of office, but there could have been further sanction in terms of not being banned from running for office in the future, which would have neutered him and probably neutered the whole Trump movement. Republicans had a chance to do that. They didn't do it. Republican leaders, that is, had a chance to do that, did not do it. The context I wanted to give was how in 2016, President Trump, Donald Trump, then candidate Trump, then private person Trump, upset, shocked the world with his win over Hillary Clinton in the 2016 election. Republicans maintained at that time control of both the Senate and the House, and actually added to their gains there, added to their majorities there. And so what you ended up with was obviously for at least the first 2 years, similar to what Barack Obama had, similar to what George W. Bush had, similar to what Bill Clinton had. You had all three of the major chambers, the White House, the two houses of the Congress, under the thumb of one party. And at that stage, you're supposed to get some things done. I don't know that anyone would say Bill Clinton got anything done. Healthcare reform was a big failure. George W. Bush got No Child Left Behind, so he got something done. It wasn't good. Barack Obama got the the Affordable Care Act. That was something. It wasn't what it needed to be, but it was something. Donald Trump in the first 2 years, aside from tax cuts, deregulation, I'm not sure what you could say the accomplishments of the first 2 years of the Donald Trump term were. And then Republicans lost the House in the 2018 midterms. And so already you're starting to see the erosion, very quickly. In 2020, then, Trump loses the election by 7 million votes, 4.5 percentage points, 74-vote margin in the Electoral College, even as Republicans below, down ticket, House and Senate, that in the Senate, Republicans lost seats, but they maintained a 50-50 split, and it took Democrats sweeping the Georgia runoffs to get to a 50-50 split. And with Kamala Harris as the vice president, of course, that gives Democrats control of that chamber. But the GOP actually made gains in the House, close enough to be within shouting distance for 2022. And so it's one of those things where, okay, if you're making the political calculation if you're a Republican leader, if you're a Republican thought leader, whatever the case may be, and we need to stick with this Trump guy because that's the ticket to us winning elections in the future. Your guys down ticket, your guys and gals down ticket outran him. So that doesn't make sense. And then you look at this and there's not unanimity. It's 75% 75% split, saying that 75% would like to see Trump maintain. But now that 21% that says they do not want him to maintain a role as a leader of the Republican Party going forward. There's been a sizable number of Republicans who kind of held their noses, and I don't kind of with acquiescence towards Donald Trump, basically because, okay, we don't like Donald Trump, but we like power. Do those folks start splitting off is a question. Anecdotally, I know a few Republicans that were very much never Trumpers. They're still Republicans. I mean, I know in this day and age, Donald Trump and his supporters like to think that anyone who isn't a Trumper is not a Republican. I know lifelong Republicans really well know lots of lifelong. I mean, I live in an area. The Augusta Free Press is based in one of the redder parts of this country. So when I say I know a lot of Republicans, I know a lot of Republicans. I know a lot more Republicans than I know Democrats who made a Faustian bargain with the idea of Donald Trump, much less the reality of Donald Trump. And now that we've seen what we've seen, not just, you know, the last 4 years, but then on January 6th, now that we've seen that, those folks are very much up in the air. The resounding 61% majority of independents saying they don't want to see Donald Trump in 2024 should signal something. What shocks me is that if you're a Republican leader type, what you could look at here is, you know, I do this all the time. Okay, I'll talk sports for a second. I'm a sports writer, sports analyst as well. You lose a game. I'm one of the things I write about a lot in sports, UVA basketball. UVA basketball lost last night to Florida State pretty handily, 81-60. It's one game. Can you learn from that loss? And what can you learn from that loss and apply to the next time you are in a situation similar against a very good team? Florida State's a national championship contender, just like Virginia is. So you take what you can and then try to learn from it. And what I would take from what Donald Trump was able to do in 2016 to squeak out a win in that election, he lost the popular vote, but he won enough Midwestern states to win the Electoral College. What did he do well? And what I would say he did well, and the only thing he did well, was stir up populist, anti-establishment, anti-elite sentiment. I mean, because there was no concrete policy. There's no structure. There's no specifics. There's no Trump doctrine. It's unless you can call being anti-liberal a doctrine, which you can't. So those things, I mean, you know, Republicans for many cycles, for a couple of generations have had been saddled with the reputation of being country club elitist, among other things. And so, okay, yeah, as a Democrat, as an American, the anti-immigrant sentiment that has stirred up the anti-people of color sentiment, I would say the anti-women's, the anti-LGBTQ sentiment. I mean, there's a lot of antis in there that go with anti-establishment. Those are uncomfortable. But it's Nixonian. I mean, this is not a unique playbook for Trump. He just was the first since Nixon to be able to really, maybe since Reagan. Reagan wasn't quite as silly, as over the top as Trump, and he wasn't as dark as Nixon. But Reagan ran a similar playbook. Reagan Democrats for Southern Democrats, and that's the groundwork was laid by Nixon. So all Trump did was stir up the Reagan base, the Nixon base. And form them into an interesting coalition of the country club elitist and poor whites who felt and feel left out. I mean, I grew up in a trailer park. My hometown, Cremora, Virginia, 10 miles north of Waynesboro, voted 89% Trump in this cycle. So you can't, I mean, I grew up with it. I lived with it. I can understand it, and so what I would say is I would take what Trump did well and find, if I was a Republican leader, I'd try to find a better vessel to carry that message forward. Ron DeSantis jumps out at me, taking my, Democrat hat off and just saying, as a political analyst, who out there has some bona fides right now, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. I think a lot of folks would look at, media tried really hard to make him look bad throughout the coronavirus pandemic, and Florida's done pretty well, certainly better than our good friend Cuomo up in New York, who's now under fire for apparently hiding some things related to the record in New York on coronavirus, which those of us who've been following closely the numbers have known for months, but now the national media is finally picking up because they can't pick on Trump every day, right? So DeSantis is one guy that stands out. I mean, there's 4 years. I say one guy, there's women and men, there's whatever the case may be. It's not quite 4 years now, but obviously 3 years from now, we'll be in the throes of whatever's going on the Republican side. It's so early in whatever race there is that you don't worry about that, but there's a better vessel. There's no doubt a better vessel. There's going to be someone who's, easily caricatured as Trump. As actually knows policy, might actually do some things to get things moving in certain directions, as Trump was a classic failure. What strikes me is that basically, instead of doing that, Republicans, at least for now, are borrowing from that classic Saturday Night Live sketch. They're just saying more cowbell. We didn't have enough cowbell. We need more cowbell. So now I'm going to switch this. I wrote a column on this, and I didn't put this in the column. It kind of occurred to me as the day was going on that there's a relation to what these numbers tell you, the 75% of Republicans who definitely want Trump, the 21% who definitely don't, the independents who overwhelmingly don't. Okay, so what I wrote was about Republicans, if they go the route of staying with the Trump movement, they risk becoming the Whigs. The Whig party was part of the second two-party system in the 19th century, the first half of the 19th century up into the 1850s, elected several presidents in a row. And the Whigs broke off from each other. They broke off sectionally. That was, the politics of the 1850s were very much about slavery. And that party broke off into Northern and Southern wings, and then they separated and divided their power, and the Southern wings coalesced around protecting slavery, and the Northern wings kind of split even amongst themselves. And the Whig Party, which had elected presidents up until the 1850s, just was gone by the 1860 election. If this Republican Party, I would argue, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but if this Republican Party doesn't resolve its fealty to, I guess would be the better word, to Donald Trump, 75% of what they got in this cycle is a landslide loss. And it's losses in the House. It's losses in the Senate. That's the stakes. I'm going to turn this around, though. Republicans have their own issues. My Republican friends who've been talking to me and emailing me and et cetera about wanting to get their party back from Trump, I'm gonna leave that in their camp. You guys figure that out, right? As a Democrat now, I'll speak about my experience as someone growing up in a single parent home in a trailer park in a community that votes 89% for Donald Trump. And why people who don't have the economic benefits of voting Republican vote Republican nonetheless. Because if you were the average person living in that trailer park I grew up in, you may or may not and probably don't have health insurance. Republicans have consistently, dating back to the Clinton era, and all the way through, have fought any kind of improvement in that respect. They fought the Clinton healthcare reform of 1993, 1994. They fought the Affordable Care Act. Universal healthcare is the solution, honestly, but we can't even get close to that. Even here in Virginia, the Affordable Care Act allowed for the expansion of Medicaid that our Republicans in charge at the time in the General Assembly blocked for many years until a couple of years ago. If you're the average person living in a trailer park in Cremora, Virginia, 89% voting for Donald Trump in 2020, your life is better if you have access to affordable health care. Your life is better. It's immeasurably better. You don't have to worry about, you don't have to just go to the emergency room to get routine health care when you get sick. And I know, I mean, I'm 48 years old. I run a successful media company. I've long since had healthcare coverage, good healthcare coverage. I still don't go to the doctor. It's just ingrained in me. You don't go to the doctor unless your head's about to fall off. And even then, you try to put a Band-Aid on it. It's just, you don't. You don't participate in that system. Your life would be immeasurably better if the people you voted for would have your back on that. Instead, they give tax cuts to billionaires. The reason I'm sitting here is because I took advantage of the public education system. In Augusta County, I'm going to just say it out loud. It's not the greatest. When I went to college, I had to learn how to learn. But I was able to use the system to get into the University of Virginia and then work my way through that to get to where I am now. Education is a great equalizer. Here in Augusta County, local level now, not federal level, it's not the Fed's fault here, but at the local level, your elected representatives prioritize in your name low taxes. That's how they get reelected, low taxes. Those low taxes end up meaning low spending on education, which means low educational outcomes, which means your kids don't get trained for the jobs that can pay them to have better lives. So you vote again for policies, for people who enact policies that make it so that your kids can't pull themselves up and have a better life than you have, which is what you wanted. It's what your parents wanted for you. It's what their parents wanted for them. You're not giving that to your kids because you vote Republican. Healthcare, education, the two most important things. Jobs. What are we doing when you vote Republican? What are you doing to make your job situation better? In Virginia, it's been the Democrats, dating back to Mark Warner, who've had their eye out for improving the economy, for improving workplace rules, for improving the plight of workers. The fight for an increased minimum wage, which raises all boats. If you vote for Republicans, you're voting for right to work laws that make it so that the real right to work is the right to get paid less for your work. So why are you voting for that? Well, I'm not going to fault the people who vote. I mean, the 89% in the community I grew up in, they vote the way they do because they're told that Democrats don't look out for them. They're told that Democrats look down their noses at them. I mean, I get called an elitist. I grew up. Very fortunately, I got to know my grandparents very well, and they helped and they half raised me, if not more than half raised me. So growing up in a single parent household, I was close to that older generation, and they were children of the Depression, and you knew it. My grandfather kept a safe in his downstairs. My grandfather ran a small construction company, so small that it was him and a work crew. And some summers I worked with him. He kept a safe. He had money in the bank, but he also kept it safe because the banks failed in the 30s. My grandmother always had two freezers full of food. And whenever you went to visit, she sent you home with food because you never know when something's going to happen and you're going to need food. So they were children of the Depression, and they were in their 60s and 70s and 80s and still thought that way. I'm a child of how I grew up. I'm a child of the trailer park. No matter what happens to me in life, that's how I think. And So I can identify with the notion that Democrats seem to look down on folks who vote for Republicans when they shouldn't, from a personal benefit standpoint, right? Because I know why they do, because they do feel looked down upon. They do feel like Democrats are talking down their noses to them. And honestly, I don't know that Democrats know that there are things they could sell to those voters that would be lapped up by those voters if they were told the right way. But when you talk down to people, when you tell them, vote your interest, don't vote for those guys, when you call people racist, when you say people are dumb for voting the way they do, I don't know anybody who's ever been told that they're dumb for doing something, that they're told they've done something wrong, that they're doing something wrong, that they're acting against their self-interest, that doesn't double down on that and say, I'll show you. So think about that when next time you're on social media and you're commenting on something that one of your liberal friends has retweeted or reposted from someone else's Facebook page, a news item or something like that, that pokes fun at Republicans for all the various foibles that they should be poked fun at, I guess, right? No question. Not all people who vote Republican are racist. Not, and certainly not all. God, that's without saying. But when you demonize people, they're not going to be on your team. We've got to change the way we relate to each other. Not just in, you know, I'll say it to them too. I'll say it to the folks that I want to reach out to. You know, we've all got to realize that the first thing we are is Americans, right? And the first thing we are is people. And then, it's, you know, then we're Americans. But, and we all need to be on the same team. And this idea, gosh, I was watching a movie the other night. It was the Judas and Black Messiah, great movie, recommended watch. And you know, it was about the 60s and the various radical groups, you know, all in conflict with each other. And all I could think is, man, it's just amazing to me that you know, there were people and are people, because January 6th was this, right? That there are people, were people, will be people who are motivated, you know, by hate, by getting back at people. I mean, I don't know. You know, I've got liberal friends. I've got friends who text me and message me frequently who, you know, I want to say, and I do say, you know, why are you so focused on the bad people? There's lots and lots of good people. There's lots of good things going on in the world. Why do we always focus on the negative so much? I know. I'm a news editor. I look at the numbers all the time, the stories about car wrecks and murders and assaults, and the bad stuff gets clicks. I report them. We report them on Augusta Free Press because you got to report the news. I spend time on trying to point out the good and lift up the good, but people don't read those stories. We only focus on the negative. Human nature? I don't know. I mean, is human nature? I mean, can we change our human nature? I guess, you know, maybe we can. I don't know. It's frustrating because, you know, I wake up every morning happy and looking forward to what I can do to maybe do something that day, one thing that day at least, to make the world a better place and educate myself and smile and laugh, listen to some music, work hard, work out hard. When it's not 10 feet of snow on the ground, get out and get a walk with my dogs. And that's one thing I can't do is identify with all the hate. And it's not just people watching this right now, listening to this right now. Y'all tend to be, I mean, this is a progressive news website. I doubt I have too many actual Trumpers watching or listening. But if there were, I mean, I will say, I'll concede, It's you guys aren't the only ones who hate. There's plenty of liberal hate towards conservatives, and it is, you know, can't we all just get along? Is easy to say, but I think if we're going to bridge the gap, it takes both sides wanting to bridge the gap. And I don't know that, you know, our side, I'm going to speak from our side, from the left side, from the progressive side, liberal side. You know, if we want to make this country not be a continual 50-50, let's all own the libs, own the conservatives, on every issue every day. If we don't want it to continue to be that world in perpetuity, you know, somebody's got to be the first one to reach out. And I hope it's our side. And then I hope the other side joins in, and I hope at the end we don't care who was first. I just hope that we get along, because, you know, I wanted to think after January 20th of this year that we would get that guy out of office, and we wouldn't have to worry anymore about his, you know, several times a day spasms on Twitter, whatever silly thing he was proposing that day or what person he was insulting that minute. And we could get beyond that, and we could get to fixing all the problems we got to fix, right? Man, healthcare, education, economic development, infrastructure issues. I mean, our infrastructure is crumbling. It's not just Trump's fault. Obama was president for 8 years. George W. Bush was president for 8 years. Bill Clinton was president for 8 years. Reagan and Bush were president for 12 years. This has been an ongoing thing for a long time. You know, we're fighting wars over what? We've spent trillions of dollars fighting wars over what? There's lots of things we need to fix. And all we're doing right now, still, and we're all about a month into this now, and we're still just texting each other, tweeting each other, Facebooking all the time about nonsense. Why don't we just throw down our spears? And why don't we just start fixing things? Wouldn't that be a novel concept? All right, well, that's going to be my rant for the night. Might be my rant for the month. I'll get back to the important stuff, talking sports, I promise. Thanks for joining me on the show here today. And hey, just understand, if you wake up with a positive attitude, you pledge yourself to go to bed with a positive attitude, you'll have a positive attitude all day long. And you'll be surprised what you can achieve. Be surprised. Thanks for joining me here on the show. I really appreciate it. Support Augusta Free Press. Read our website, augustafreepress.com. Share our stories, et cetera. Have a great day, everybody. I'm Chris Graham signing off.